Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn McGee, back on the ball in Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning for November 17th, 2010, episode 13, and this time it's sponsored by Back on Track. Good morning, Horse World, and good morning, Glenn. How are you guys?
We're a little tired after our trip back, but I think today, because we're back in the studio, we Jennifer can actually talk. Can you talk, Jennifer?
Woohoo! Come here, ladies and gentlemen.
It was funny because the last 2 days she had all these quippy comments and funny little statements, but she couldn't say them, so she was typing at us during the show. So we kept seeing them and laughing because they were funny, but she couldn't say them on the air.
I was about to explode.
Well, you know, Glenn, you've now learned that if you want to keep your wife quiet, all you have to do is go on a remote. Just go on a remote
location.
That's right,
do a road trip. Road trip to Norco. I think we're all going to have to take a road trip to Norco now after yesterday's show.
What a cool place. Yeah. I think it sounds really, really neat. It's not too far away from me, so you guys might have to book a plane ticket, but let's go.
Okay, yeah. We had Katie Watson commented on Facebook yesterday. She said, hi, Jamie and Glenn, so let me know when the bus leaves to Norco, California, or the horse caravan. I'm ready for a visit to Horsetown, USA. So it's so cool that we have people now listening to us in Horsetown, USA. So good morning, Norco, California, and good morning, everybody else in the world that's listening. We appreciate you being here. And, you know, even though we're tired, we're up for a fun show today.
Now,
so let's have Jennifer. Yeah, go ahead.
No. Don't you even go to Jennifer yet. You mentioned Facebook. Yeah, you can't skip this because I spent some time. Your brother is the proprietor of EasySignsOnline.com, which is a sponsor for our show. So I called him yesterday, just after you left from broadcasting live on Easy Signs Online, and I called him because my husband and I want to order a sign for our farm, and he does some beautiful work, and he's got some very professional, I mean, the perfect signs for our farm. So I call him, and I'm talking to him,
Stop, Jamie. So you're telling me that you talked to my brother, who we just stayed with for 4 days, who I was trying to really keep you from talking to anybody in our families, to be honest.
You know what I did is I waited till you guys left, and I called him 5 minutes after you IM'd me. You're like, we're on the road. And I'm like, sweet, I can call Wayne. So I called him, and I talked to him in 5 seconds, and he goes, you can tell I'm Glenn's brother, can't you? And I said, oh, without a doubt. You guys are so much alike. But I may have done something. He may have provided me with a little bit of ammo regarding you and Jennifer. You're both involved in this. And I would like for you to go and check your Facebook pages right now, facebook.com/horsesinthemorning, because I have posted a photo of you and Jennifer that your brother sent me.
All right, wait a minute. I'm getting there. No, hold on a second. Hey! See, I knew that you talking to the family was going to be a bad idea.
Well, his phone number's online, so I just called him up, and he gave me the photo. If you go onto Facebook, you'll see it. It is the photo of Glenn and Jennifer riding the roller coaster at 60 miles an hour, and the expression on both of their faces, especially Jennifer's, is sheer terror. I mean, you look like you have just wet yourself. It is that funny.
Yeah,
so.
Pretty much. The I'm not having any fun at all face.
Really?
This was right.
Terrible.
This was actually on the Aerosmith roller coaster at Disney Studios. And on that roller coaster, it's one of those that's magnetic, so you go from 0 to 60 in about 2.8 seconds.
Yeah.
And this, they take this picture right after you come out of the tunnel where you've gone from, you just hit 60 miles an hour. So everybody, you notice in that picture, by the way, that's my brother Wayne and my sister-in-law Pam in the back seat there. So did he tell you that part?
Yes, he did. And he also described what his face looks like. And I don't know if I could say it on the air. But there's no doubting it once you see it. So everybody go look at it, and you'll see exactly what he looks like he's doing at the time that he's doing
it.
Yes, yes. I think that's enough said, yeah.
Enough said, yeah.
We all enjoyed the roller coaster. After you get past that 60 seconds, you open your eyes again, and it's all indoor, and it's very loud music and stuff there, isn't it?
Yeah,
so,
awesome.
But it was cool. We had a great we loved that roller coaster. We wanted to go back on. We didn't have time. We would have went back on, and maybe we all could have had our eyes open. But Jennifer never opens her eyes in roller coasters.
No.
Oh,
I love them. I love them, but I cannot open my eyes because that will be hurl in a millisecond.
Really?
Yeah, and I really want her doing that with me beside her.
Put her in the back. Oh, my gosh. Well, we've got a really cool show coming up today. Our topic for later on today, because there's a sad and bizarre ending that I want to tell everybody about, Glenn and Jennifer. But we're going to talk about your favorite movie horses, TV horses, stunt horses, whatever horses that you've seen, you know, on the silver screen or on the big screen or whatever. We're going to talk to you about them. I mean, you have our favorite book horses. I mean, I don't think anybody can argue with Black Beauty being such a great book horse, but we want to talk to you about movie, TV horses, because it's going to lead us into the very bizarre ending of My Favorite Horse, and we'll do that coming up in about an hour.
That sounds great. Well, Jennifer, why don't you tell us who our guests are on the show today, because we have some fun ones lined up.
Coming up on today's show, we have two major stars of the small screen on our show today. First up, we have Mike Majors, winner of the recent Project Cowboy reality show, which was a pilot shot for network television in Fort Worth, Texas. It was part horseman's competition and part reality TV, and we're going to have the winner on, and he's going to tell us all about how that worked, because that sounds kind of cool. And he won $10,000 to boot, so he's probably a happy camper. Then we move on to the YouTube world for a visit from Jerry Miller, who is the owner and trainer of the internet sensation Rascal the Car Riding Pony. And this is not the little white pony that lots of you are familiar with. That had been posted a few years back, the little white redneck pony who rides around in the convertible. This is a more urban pony. He rides in a sedan. He sits in the back seat where small children should sit. And it's pretty hilarious. So we're going to have a chat with Jerry Miller. And to round out the show, we're going to have our regular visit from the folks at thehorse.com with some really fun and interesting ideas about healthy and safe barns. That's what's coming up.
Well, that sounds great. It sounds like a fun day. And, of course, today we also have a prize for a one lucky caller. And today's prize is two jars of Squeezy Buns from Uncle Jimmy's brand product. Squeezy Buns are a great product. They're actually these horse treats that come individually wrapped. They're about the size, bigger than a half dollar. And one of the cool things about Squeezy Buns is because they're soft and pliable, is you can take them apart and put pills in them and then feed the horses pills or their medicines that way. Or you can just feed them as treats. Horses absolutely love Squeezy Buns. So we're giving away two jars of Squeezy Buns from Uncle Jimmy's brand products today to one lucky caller. And we have prizes for the month.
Yeah, $500 shopping spree from EquestrianCollections.com. Just be a caller on our show. Get in, talk to us on the air at 347-637-3238. That is all you have to do to be registered for that or your choice of any Vespucci bridle and reins worth up to $100 from worldequestrianbrands.com. So pretty cool thing that we have going on here. Again, it's so easy. All you have to do is be a part of the show, and you'll win any of these fabulous prizes. And not to mention the fact that, you know, Glenn's going to probably be telling you about the daily prize, because one of his favorite things to do is talk about squeezy buns. Am I right?
Well, that is one of my favorite things to do. I absolutely, yeah, you know me pretty well. You've been talking to my brother way too much. That's what I got to say.
I know, but it's that or the hanging balls that you like to talk about. So one or the other. Uncle Jimmy, thank you for being part of our show yet again.
Well, you wait till I get that, when I had you read that commercial for the hanging balls. I am going to cut that out. We're going to use that again. I promise you. That's going to pop up at the most unexpected time.
Oh, no. Well, you know what? I'll just keep posting pictures of you on Facebook that your brother sends me. How about that?
We do have a couple more pictures I want to take off and post on Facebook from the trip that were kind of fun. Oh, well, favorite horses in small or big screen? You know, when I was growing up, which was I was in, you know, elementary school and high school through the 70s, and we still were watching reruns of the programs that were put out in the 60s. So Mr. Ed was still on back then, the TV show, and that was really the horse that I was first exposed to as a kid was Mr. Ed. You're too young for Mr. Ed, aren't you?
Oh, no. See, as a child of the 80s and 90s, we had something called Nickelodeon, which had Nick at Night. And at 8 o'clock every night, Mr. Ed played 2 episodes on Nick at Night. So I actually have the entire series collection in my DVD case.
Oh, really? The whole Mr. Ed stuff?
Are you jealous? Because I absolutely loved Mr. Ed. Loved Mr. Ed. I wouldn't say he's my favorite, but how interesting is it that your favorite horse is a Palomino and my favorite horse is a Palomino? And I'll tell you who that is later. I don't want to break the news now.
Oh, so you're holding out on us.
I'm holding out on you, but we would love to hear from you guys on who your favorite movie horse, TV horse, 347-637-3238. One horse that might not get mentioned that I think is so cool was the horse that Antonio Banderas rode in Zorro, when he rides up into the house and he goes up to the bad guy's bedroom and he rides the horse into the bed with the guy laying there sleeping. How cool was that? Do you remember that scene?
I forgot about that. I remember that scene. I totally forgot about that.
It was a black Frisian stallion that Antonio Banderas was riding, and oh my gosh, swoon, hello. Antonio Banderas
and, you know,
and a black Frisian, woo!
I think Blazing Saddles has to be one of my favorite movies that had horses in it. Blazing Saddles, I can't tell you how many thousands of times I've watched Blazing Saddles. That was one of my favorites.
Isn't that the one where he punches the horse in the face and he falls over?
Yes. Yes. Well, we have coming up with us our first guest. Mike Majors is on the line. He's winner of Project Cowboy. That's a Tootie Bland production, who also does Road to the Horse. And contestants, it was sort of like a pilot. Well, he's going to tell us what it is. So I think we have him on here. Let's see if we can get him on. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Mike. Welcome to the show. We can hear you just fine. Welcome to the show. We appreciate you being on. So tell us, what was Project Cowboy? Because I don't think a lot of people have heard about it. I know that I hadn't read much about it. So what was it? What exactly happened?
Well, exactly what happened or what was it?
Let's start there.
Yeah. Well, it was a competition where it showed different maneuvers, different deals all the way through it. As far as saddling, it started out really kind of as a really low key competition, just leading your horse, unsaddling him, and picking feet up and so on. Then it just kind of advanced into a little bit more difficult competitions. But it was just mostly show your horseman skills and kind of try to get you out of your comfort zone on what you were used to doing.
Now, it was a pilot for a TV show, is that correct?
Well, that's what I've heard and I've read some, but as far as talking to Tootie and Patty, we haven't really discussed the whole lot of stuff, just exactly where it's headed.
Okay, so, but it was filmed for the entire time you were on film doing it?
Yes, it was. It was filmed for the entire time. It sure was.
Okay, so let me try to get a picture of this. So was it kind of like a Road to the Horse type thing where you given an unbroken horse and you had to start it, or did you ride your own horses, or what kind of thing, how did it start?
Well, it was kind of a mix-up of everything. And when it got down to, like, the top 10, it was like a meet and greet. They give you, like, a little yearling colt that they wanted you to just kind of introduce a human to it. They had never seen a person before or whatever. And then another part there was, like, to see if you could ride some other horses. So they had a bunch of warm blood horses in there for us to ride that Texas A&M College sent in. And you're taking a bunch of cowboys, Western cowboys and cowgirls, and then sticking them on these big warm bloods and such on English saddles. And then they made us unsaddle the horses and ride the horses through a trail course bareback. And they told us these horses had never been through a trail course or rode bareback, either one. And so that was quite interesting, especially you go to walk up to your bridge and your old horse that I drew, and it just scared him to death, and we got him through it. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, the total of it looks like 8 rounds that you had to do over 3 days with all different kinds of stuff.
Yeah, then they had a screen test there. That was one of my worst nightmares, because I'm just not really good at speaking in a camera and such as that. So but it was pretty interesting. It really was, actually, and it was a very fun competition to do, because it just wasn't so the same old thing. It was so mixed up and so many different avenues to it.
Did anybody fall off during the bareback trail course on warm blood segment?
No, there wasn't nobody fell off. There was one cowboy, I believe, who he forgot to kick his feet out of the stirrups, and his foot hung in the stirrup pretty bad when he went to get off, and it almost turned into a pretty bad wreck. But he finally made it out all right.
Oh my God!
And some of those horses, it's kind of amazing, because I'd never rode a warm blood horse before, and I drew a horse that seemed to be, I was watching him when we walked into the arena. He was making quite an appearance for himself, but he was throwing his head and kind of rearing up and acting kind of silly. And I was thinking, as they led us into the arena to pick our horses or to draw for our horses, I think, man, I hope I don't draw that number 9 horse. And sure enough, that's the one I drawed. I changed myself. He was a little tough. He was a little bit tough, but they really get a hold of the bridle a lot more than what we're used to, especially riding Western horses.
Oh yeah, obviously. I mean, I ride English, but we also have my husband's horse out back, and if you touch his face, he'll slam on the brakes. My warm blood,
right.
They like the contact. They go into the bridle as opposed to avoid
right.
it like Western horses do, so that had to be quite the challenge.
Yeah, that was quite a different deal.
Was that the hardest part of the competition, you think, or what was the hardest?
The hardest was the screen test for me. It was There was a series of questions they would ask you. One was, what should every cowboy know but doesn't? And then they just kind of just talk to you about and visit you about other stuff and wanted you also to tell them, like, you had your own television show and you were introducing yourself in your television show, and also when you finished your show, you know, just signing off what you would do, what you would say, signing off your television show.
And what was yours?
What was my, as far as the, as what should every cowboy know but doesn't?
You're going to answer both of them. Go ahead.
I probably can't even remember the other because I couldn't remember it when I was supposed to. But the one on what every cowboy should know but doesn't was I told when I walked in, I said, well, other than the cheap and dirty pickup lines don't work because most cowboys are like, hey, baby, let's go get a beer out in the back of the pickup or something. You know, that's kind of, but that doesn't work. And I said, no, not really. But in all honesty, what my theory is that you see most people, most horsemen who are abusing their horses is usually because they've run out of knowledge on how to fix them or train them.
I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, I like the first one about the pickup line for the girl and the beer in the back of the truck.
You know, a lot of cowboys, they stay at the ranches so much and such when they come to town, they usually can't hardly talk to a girl until they've had too much to drink, and usually their pickup lines to try to pick up a pretty girl or something, they're usually not very good at first.
Now, Mike, I heard that you were dressed up as somebody. I read in a press release. Weren't you dressed up as Frank Sinatra?
Well, that's what it came out as. My wife, I kept asking her who I was supposed to be when she was dressing me up. But she said, well, you're supposed to be a 30s gangster or something like that. But anyways, it pretty much came out as Frank Sinatra with the little short-brimmed hat and high collar and the jacket and such as that. So that's kind of what they're calling it, Frank Sinatra shot or something.
Well, depending on who you ask, Frank Sinatra and gangster, yeah. Some people agree they're sure he's a gangster.
Was it kind of like the old Rat Pack or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, there you go.
But you did all right here. You won $10,000 and a Martin saddle. And the coolest part, I think, is you get to appear at the Road to the Horse and the Extreme Mustang Makeover. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. They said that I'd get to make an appearance at both of those places. And then they also had some setups at some horse expos at Cal Poly in California and I think the Midwest Horse Fair in Wisconsin, such as that, too. But we'd already had a clinic. They already had me signed to do a clinic in Madison, Wisconsin at the Horse Expo up there already before the Project Cowboy. So anyway, I'm double booked up there.
Well, that's terrific. Congratulations.
Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be a blast. Really will be. That'll be a blast.
Now, of course, right now we're talking to Mike Majors, winner of Project Cowboy, and we'll be seeing and hearing more about that coming up. But what we're talking about today, Mike, is your favorite TV or movie horses. Do you have a favorite?
Well, you know, of course, when we were kids, it was like Champ. Gene Autry's horse was a favorite, and of course, you know, Roy Rogers. But then you got Old Dollar, the horse that John Wayne rode. Boy, was, you know, he was a great big nice horse. But the ranch that my wife and I have in Colorado, we kind of cater to Champ, I suppose, because it's the old Flying A ranch. Actually, it's the ranch that Gene Autry owned with Harry Knight when they had the rodeo string years ago, the old Flying A rodeo company.
You're kidding.
Do you own Gene Autry's old ranch?
Pardon me?
I said you own Gene Autry's old ranch? Really?
Yeah. I bought it 20 years ago, I guess, when I moved to Colorado, and that's where they ran their rodeo company out of, was the Flying A ranch there in Powder, Colorado.
Oh, that is so cool.
Wow.
Yeah, that is pretty neat. Of course, I don't know if he left any money up there in the world. I've dug around out in the backyard, and I haven't found any money stashed in any cans yet. Boy, I could sure use it. The cattleman has been kind of tough. But anyway.
So what kind of of work do you guys do on your ranch?
We've got the ranch in Colorado. We run just pretty much yearlings, and then we run our horse program out of the ranch in Colorado. And so we're, like, when I'm in yearling cattle, where we buy a lot of calves in the fall, starting right about now, and we run them until about October of next year. Of course, all through the wintertime, we usually wind up, you know, we're feeding them and doctoring cattle all the time, and also gives us an opportunity to ride a bunch of them young colts and such as that, and doing different things on them and getting them out and doing the actual things that, you know, we'll do a lot of that in the show pen when we get into show pen and working cow horses such as that. But then I've got my wife and I have two ranches in New Mexico also that we run cows and calves on the ranches down there.
Yeah, I have to ask you a question. So I assume you have mostly quarter horses on the ranch. But after your competition, are you bringing in a few warm bloods now? You in an English saddle?
Well, I was kind of thinking about the warm bloods, but I thought, you know, I may have to get me some bell bars or something and go to working out a little bit. I don't know if I'm quite strong enough to pick them horses up.
Oh, come on, you can do it.
when I was riding that warm blood, after I went over the jump the second time, he really got strong in the bridle and kind of wanted to, and just kind of took the bridle and especially riding bareback, I was really having a hard time getting a hold of that horse. And so I was pulling his face back to the right and back to the left. I was running down the arena, and this one guy who was competing with me, after I got, and of course this horse was changing leads every time I was pulling his face to one side or the other, I was just trying to find a soft place to stop him. You know, if I could find a soft place in his horse's neck, maybe I could finally get him stopped. But I never could do it. So we were switching leads all the way coming down the arena. And after I got through competing, Ben, the guy who wound up winning second, he said, man, them lead changes was really cool on that horse. And I said, yeah, they was pretty good. You kind of want to change leads. He said, no. I said, man, they was really, he said, what made you think of that? And I said, I don't know, it just kind of came to me. And then he stepped on and I said, Ben, we were in a flat runaway. I said, I was just trying to find some place, like a soft place anywhere I could get him pulled around. Of course, Ben, he just rolled on the ground laughing at that time too, But I think old number 9 was just, I think he had a kind of a history of being a pretty tough horse.
I cannot believe that you got the horse to do tempi changes and everybody thought you were doing it on purpose and you're not
right.
Doing it on purpose at all. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I was just trying to find a soft place in his neck to get him slowed down.
We're going to see Mike. Next major dressage competition here in the East Coast, and we'll get him signed up.
Yeah, right on. You're
I look forward to it. I'd love it. It'd be fun.
Well, Mike, it has been a pleasure to talk to you. Of course, Mike Major is the winner of Project Cowboy, and hopefully we'll see that on one of the NBC, CBS coming up soon. We will, of course, keep you posted on that. Congratulations, and good luck out on the ranch.
Well, thank you all very much, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Thank you,
Mike. Talk to you soon. Well, Glenn, our sponsor this half hour is Back on Track Products, and there's a company that we love that offers products to improve lifestyle and mobility, and they've been the mainstay in European therapeutic products for many years. Plus, they're used and endorsed by many of the top dressage, eventing, and show jumping riders worldwide. We are, of course, talking about Back on Track. If you're looking for a quality holiday gift for any horse lover that'll truly benefit their horse, then look no further than any of Back on Track's exercise boots, bell boots, saddle pads, or sheets. Visit backontrackproducts.com today or give them a call at 888-758-9836.
Well, thank you to Back on Track. We appreciate them being part of the show. Well, yesterday you called us. You were so excited. We were driving back from Florida in the car, and you were so excited to have come across the video and contacted this next guest, and I think he's on the line. Tell us about it.
All right, well, what we have now is we have Jerry Miller on the phone, and I don't know if anybody saw, you know, I say that everybody has to have seen this video by now of a family is driving down the road, and this was posted on Facebook by every one of my friends yesterday, driving down the road, and they start videotaping the car next to them driving down the road, and they're going, there's a horse in the car, there's a horse in the car, there's a horse in the car, and lo and behold, in the back of this sedan is a miniature horse who then pokes his head out and starts looking at them through the window. And we track down the owner of that horse, and his name is Jerry Miller. Jerry, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
So talk to us here. How exactly, first of all, why was the horse in the back of your car?
Okay, I haul him that way a lot. I do therapy work. We were on our way to Topeka to a neurological institution, which is for mentally and physically handicapped, and I'm was up there with the patients, and he really draws them out. It is fun. We used to do shows around the country somewhat. He does about 40 tricks altogether, and so we do shows and stuff, but he just loves it.
So when I talked to you yesterday to confirm that you'd come on with us today, I think you had just said that Inside Edition just left your house.
Yes, Inside Edition was out. They tell me that it will probably air this afternoon, but I'm not sure. And if it does, I'm pretty excited about it because there are some people in the comments that think, oh, this horse is forced and he's cramped and all that. And they show me hopping him in the car and out of it and how the car is set up to do this, you know. He's not standing on the back seat. He's got a platform, and there's a bar that I put across between him and the front. So if I had to hit my brakes, he'd have a support. And he has more room in there than most horses in a horse trailer. He can turn around and whatever. He just stands there usually with his head over my shoulder, which in the video, that's where his head was until she spoke, and he turned his head to look out the window.
She yelled at him. She's like, hello, horsey. And he turned around and looked at her, just like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, that was just strictly coincidental. I think that really made it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that definitely made the video, for sure.
Uh-huh.
So, Jerry, you're driving down the road, and these people, do you know that they're videotaping? Do you not know? And then how did they find you, or you find them?
Sometimes I know they're doing it because it doesn't bother me when they take pictures and stuff, but occasionally I've had like one person in the car driving and trying to take a video at the same time, and that's I'm a lot more vigilant when I have him in the car than I am otherwise. And really tracking them down, I saw it on a local news station, which is the first I knew of it. I saw the thing, and it said the name and where they were from, and so I looked it up on YouTube, or my son did. I really didn't even know how to do that at the time, and he had that barbershop 22, and I thought, well, maybe he runs a barbershop, and I jumped in the car and drove to Osage City, and sure as heck, there was a Potter barbershop, and I found him.
Oh,
well, that's cool. Man, that's some homework there, Jerry. Jerry,
yeah.
I have to ask you, so we have to qualify here for people who haven't seen the video, and we'll post it on our show notes, too, at Horses in the Morning. Mm-hmm. But when I first saw it, too, he's a miniature horse. This is not a full-size horse in the back of your sedan.
Oh,
how big is...
He's 30 inches tall and weighs just over 200 pounds. Sure, he's. I've got a dog almost as big as he is, and I've seen a lot of dogs way bigger.
I've seen a lot bigger dogs in the back seat of a car. Now, his name is Rascal?
Yeah.
And how old is he?
15.
You know, it's interesting, too, Jamie. A lot more miniature horses are now being used for therapy work around the country.
Right.
When I lived in Pennsylvania, the Red Cross there had a therapy horse that would go out to the children's hospitals and places, and
mm-hmm.
they just get such a reaction. This must be so satisfying for you to do this work with him.
Yes. As I've told people, you know, I don't charge for that at all, which is one of the reasons I haul them in the car. I've got a pickup or a Suburban and a trailer, but if I'm lucky, that thing makes 10 miles a gallon. I couldn't afford to do it. But I've had people, well, what do you charge? I, how can I charge for that? I said, the feeling I get when one of those people that's in a shell comes out and starts talking and stuff, that feeling's not for sale.
No,
well,
it
isn't.
That's really...
Yeah,
that's really a heroic thing. How long have you been in and around horses?
All my life. My dad trained draft horses. I trained horses for 50 years myself, and I just retired from training 4 years ago.
Training around, except for Rascal.
Right, right. And I ride my own. I have a little Paso Fino that I competition trail ride and have just started getting into the Extreme Horsemanship Challenge, which is like the Extreme Cowboy Race. And, in fact, the little Paso Fino that I ride for that, I just did one. And up there that day, because I train on a little bit different method and his trust, I was took my jacket off to give it to my wife, and just out of the, for the heck of it, I tossed it up over his head and asked him to go, and he'd let me ride him anywhere with that, completely blinded with that coat.
So yeah. What I'm hearing is that you say you're retired, but you're not retired at all, are you?
Well, yes and no. I've got a few people that call me that, oh, I've got a problem horse, and yeah, I'll jump in the car. And I've got one lady I work with every week that's 70 miles away, but she's got a horse that had a problem, and like I told her, I'm concerned about the horse. And so, yeah, you can't quit completely. I mean, you know, I'm still very much learning, and every horse teaches me something.
Well, now, you said Inside Edition, but has anybody else contacted you from the major shows?
Well, not to actually come out and do anything yet. I've had people from all over the world, TV stations, calling to ask permission and to do short interviews and stuff. I've just, in fact, last night talked to a station in Japan, and they wanted to know if I'd send them some more videos and pictures, and I said no. I said, not because I don't want to. I said, but because my computer's too old and isn't probably capable, and if it was, I wouldn't be capable of doing it anyway.
Oh, that's
terrific.
Great. You're one step away from international fame, but that dang old computer just won't keep up, will it?
Right. And I,
how things can
I, like I said, my
Darren,
son told me, talked me through getting on YouTube to see it the first time. I'd never even heard of YouTube.
You know, it's funny how things can change in somebody's life in a matter of a couple minutes. I mean,
in a couple minutes, this thing has just blown completely out of reason. When I first met Rick, it was up to like 38,000, and he made the statement, oh, I wouldn't be surprised to see it go to 100,000. And I was like, oh, I can't believe that. And it's up almost to 500,000 now.
And it's just climbing. It's unbelievable. I just can't believe that you're watching the news and it comes on, hey, somebody had a horse in their car, and then it's your car.
Right.
On the news that they're filming.
I was out
and you're
doing
like,
the chores, and my son and wife come out, oh, you're on the news. I'm like, what? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Jerry, this is terrific, and I want to say congratulations, and I really appreciate you doing the work that you're doing with Rascal as a therapy horse. You know, more of us should be doing those kinds of things with our horses, and it truly does. You know, there's no other way to really bring horses to people who need them the most, which is the people in the hospitals that you're visiting.
Right. And we go into rest homes, and we can go right into the rooms, the individual rooms. A while back, I was at a rest home with there was a lady there was 103 years old, and when she saw him, she started talking about a pony she had when she was a kid and stuff.
Aww.
And I mean, you just can't beat that to me, you know. And
oh, that's great.
Well, now, Jerry, before we let you go, we are talking today about our everybody's favorite horses in TV or the movies from the past. Do you have a favorite horse from the past in TV and movies?
Oh, I can't really say that. I never was much of a moviegoer. If I'd say I had a favorite horse, it would be in what was very definitely my favorite movie having to do with horses, and that was one out in the 60s, The Rounders. And there was a strawberry roan horse in that thing. And it's funny. And I enjoy funny shows, but I'm not a big movie goer. One of the things that was interesting to me, after you people called me and I was listening to your radio program and you were just talking to a guy and I heard you mention dressage, this little trick horse, Rascal, he does quite a few dressage maneuvers on hand signals.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He side passes and quarter passes and does a high step walk and that kind of thing on hand signals. And he drives to a car.
Oh, really?
On hand signals. Mm-hmm.
How cute is that? I want to see a video of Rascal doing his thing is what I want to see.
Same one.
I want to see a video of Rascal doing all the things he does. That's the next video that has to come out. Now he's a star.
Yeah, and some of the stuff, you know, we don't do much for shows anymore. And if you happen to see the thing on Inside Edition, when he's on a teeter-totter and going through a tube thing, those were both tricks. I got thinking about it. It's been almost 3 years since I had sent him through that tube until the moment that it was done then. And it lets you realize how much of a memory a horse has. He makes a lot less mistakes than I do, I'll guarantee you.
Oh, Jerry, it's just been a pleasure. We are going to look for that Inside Edition, and then when we find it and we get to watch you and Rascal, then maybe you'll become our favorite TV horse, Rascal will. And we'll put that up on our website as well so everybody can enjoy watching Rascal, the YouTube sensation miniature horse in the back of a car doing tricks.
You bet.
Thank you, Jerry. We appreciate you being on. Good luck with Rascal.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Give him a treat for us.
Sure thing.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was Jerry Miller, who is the owner and trainer of the YouTube sensation Rascal, riding in the back of a car. And it sounds like riding in a car. I wanted to ask him what he did with the poop. I really wanted to ask him that, but I forgot.
Oh, you know, I forgot too.
I wanted to know, does it must get really stinky. I mean, he has to poop and pee, right?
Well, I was thinking that probably when he said he had the back seat kind of adjusted, he said it wasn't a seat. It was like a level floor for him. So maybe it's just like a regular shavings in there. I don't know. He had the windows cracked in the video.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, I think. Thank you to Jerry for joining us, and good job finding him there, Jamie. You tracked him down yesterday and got him to come on today, so we really appreciate that.
That's
one of the fun things about doing our live daily radio show is we can do things like that. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, well, it was pretty easy to find him, just the more people that had read about it and talked to him about it. So he was not surprised at all to hear from me. I'm like, hey, I'm with Horses in the Morning. We'd like to talk to you tomorrow. He's like, all right. no. Why? He's like, okay, sure. What time?
Okay, no problem. But talking to just got done with the Japanese. Might as well talk to you. So.
I know, right? He's like, Inside Edition left my house about 5 minutes ago. I was like, no way. Well, we're going to take your calls throughout the day. You can talk about Rascal or anything like that. The phone number to call us is 347-637-3238. Give us a call about your favorite TV or movie horse. We'll try to Rounders was a little reach for me. I hadn't seen that movie, but yeah, as Jennifer said, we'll check out Netflix and try to find it on there. But he had Rounders, the strawberry roan in there. Of course, Glenn, your favorite horse is Mr. Ed. And we'll find out yours coming up after the news.
This is the Horse Radio Network News. Federal land managers this week are scheduled to begin the first of three wild horse roundups aimed at reducing the number of Mustangs in northern Nevada. The Bureau of Land Management plans to gather and remove what they describe as about 94 excess wild horses from a site south of Carson City on Wednesday. The roundup, which is expected to be completed in 2 to 3 days, is part of an effort to remove up to 12,000 Mustangs from the west this year. The agency said there are too many horses on the range, and the herds must be culled to ensure ecological balance and forage for the remaining horses, wildlife, and privately owned cattle. Wild horse advocates said the BLM exaggerates the number of animals and harms the genetic viability of herds by indiscriminately removing animals. The American Quarter Horse Association has crowned 11 world champions so far during the AQHA World Championship Show, which runs from November 6th through the 20th at the State Fair Park in Oklahoma City. This event is the world's largest single-breed world championship horse show and is the pinnacle destination for owners and exhibitors who must qualify for the competition by earning a predetermined number of points to secure a spot in each of the 94 classes representing English, Western, and Halter disciplines. More than 3,300 entries from the United States and 12 other countries compete at this year's show, vying for more than $2.6 million in cash and prizes. Researchers from the University College Dublin and Equinome, who developed a genetic speed test for thoroughbreds, say the recent publication of 4 scientific papers describes significant advances in the understanding of genes that affect athletic performance in racehorses. The research includes a new and enhanced validation of its speed gene test, the identification of previously unknown genetic regions crucial to thoroughbred performance, and the differing responses of key metabolic genes to exercise in racehorses. Their study shows that the genetic marker used in Equinome's speed gene test to identify the optimum racing distance for individual thoroughbred horses is the most powerful indicator of its type. And finally, for eventing fans out there, news from Asia that 7 countries are entered in the CCI one-star event at the Guangzhou Asian Games. China, Hong Kong, Japan, Kazakhstan, Korea, Qatar, and Thailand will contest the event. 2 countries that did not make it despite their intentions are Indonesia, which has been training in Australia but was not nominated by its national federation, and India, who faced quarantine protocol issues which prevented their team traveling to the games. A horse from the Chinese equestrian team had to be euthanized after suffering serious intestinal disorders. The French-bred 14-year-old gelding Andrew Pete was shipped to Guangzhou on November 5th to take part in the eventing competition under rider Ru Zhang. The competition takes place this week. This is HRN News, and I'm Chris Stafford for Horses in the Morning.
Ready?
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling. Horses are coming my way. You're listening to Horses in the Morning.
Well, this is Glenn the Geek and Jamie Jennings and Jennifer H. back with you here on Horses in the Morning. We have a segment coming up we do every Wednesday about this time, and we have Christy on with us from The Horse, and she's doing her horse health weekly report with thehorse.com. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Glenn. How are you doing?
We're doing great. How are you doing on this fine Wednesday?
I am doing very well, and I'm looking forward to our show today where we're talking a little bit about healthy barns and stalls. If you got the memo.
Okay, cool. All right, yes, I got the memo this morning.
Very good. We are actually holding an online live chat session tomorrow evening on this same topic. So whatever we don't get to today, I'd love to invite people to join us tomorrow evening, November 18th, 8 to 9 p.m. That's Eastern time. We're going to have a live chat with Dr. Denny Jones, who is on with us today as well as Dr. Coleman from the University of Kentucky and Dr. May from Michigan State to talk about healthy barns and stalls and ways that you can make your own barns and stalls more healthy for your horses.
Okay, cool.
Very good. So to start off with, I thought, you know, we've all got some things. If we've had any horses in barns at all, we've probably all can think of those things that we had. You know, God, I wish that bucket wasn't on the other side of the stall, or gee, I wish that feeder was at a better height. I could barely reach it, or you know, this latch that was always snagging your pocket as you or your shoulder as you walked by. And there are a number of little things like that, but there are also a lot of things that can make them more healthy for our horses. And I'd like to start by talking with Aaron, with Dr. Danny Jones, about let's just start with size. What's the best size of a stall for a horse? Is Aaron on here?
I don't think so. I think we only have you on here at this point.
Oops.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can grab a hold of
Jennifer here.
Yeah, I'll grab a hold of her.
Okay.
We're good.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep, I don't know if she dropped off or what the story was there. We'll get her on here in a second.
All right. Well, some technical difficulties. Well, for the moment, then I can fill in with something I was going to do a little bit later and talk about just some entertainment in designing barns and stalls that I thought might be fun. I used to go to school at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and while I was there, I did a lot of riding and work with the Hoofer Riding Club. And when I first started out there, they were renting space at a local barn, and then they decided to purchase their own barn and their own facility. And it was a dairy facility to start with. And in the process of converting it, they had one building on the property that was a very large machine shed. And it ultimately ended up, it was big enough to have a double aisleway with stalls on the outsides and a back-to-back row of stalls in the middle. So this is a huge shed, and one of the things that we got to do was to set corner posts, obviously, for all the stall corners. And everybody wanting to build it very solidly, they went in with all their 4x4s and, you know, measured everything carefully and sunk all the posts. And I think they just put somebody up on a ladder with a sledgehammer and said, hit it till it quits moving. Which they did, which was great until I think they finished up and somebody stepped back and said, wow, that is the most snaggletooth set of posts I have ever seen in my life. So, I mean, all different heights. Some of them were 2 feet deeper than others until they went and hit a rock or whatever. So our task at that point became to creatively shim with lots of 2x4s to get all these corner posts up to the proper height.
Now, let me ask you, when you obviously you were up there in the north, did you get a lot of snow? And if so, did you guys have to really shore in the barn roofs? I mean, you have to put double trellises or put them close together to make sure that those roofs are strong enough. Is that part of the consideration when building something up in Wisconsin?
I am quite sure that is part of the consideration, but to be honest, this is in Madison's in the southern area of Wisconsin, and we didn't have too much snow. I lived up there for about 4 years, and I won't claim major expertise with snow because I did grow up in southeast Georgia.
I grew up in Georgia too, and anything north of Kentucky is like snow. It's just white to me in the wintertime. I have no idea.
I empathize very, very much with that.
Yeah.
But actually, the only building that they built on the property was a covered riding arena, and they did not build it with a super steep roof. I think just that area of Wisconsin doesn't get the huge 10 to 20 feet of snow that you may see in other areas. So they did not build what I saw to be a really steep, you know, like a ski resort area roof at all.
With the snow. Okay, gotcha.
Page. She's on Dr. Jones on line 4.
Hey.
Okay, Dr. Let's see, Dr. Jones, you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am. Good morning. How's everybody doing?
We're doing great. How about you?
Great.
Good.
So we were talking to you, and you weren't even here. So, Chrissy, if you want to go ahead and start back with your first question for Dr. Jones, go ahead.
I can do that. Pardon our technical difficulties. Aaron, we've already introduced the show a little bit and what we're doing today, and so wanted to start with just basic stall size. What's the right size? What's a good, healthy size of stall for a horse?
Size that barn builders have are 10 by 10. That's 10 foot by 10 foot. But I find those to be too small. I think that's been based off of, the quarter horse sized horse. I find the 11 by 11 is a little bit better. And then, of course, there's foaling stall sizes, which are 10 by 16.
Gotcha. And so for a draft horse, then, you would recommend something even a little bit bigger?
Yeah, 12 by 12 would be great for them. And then you also have to consider the size of the doorway so they don't ding their head going into the doorway.
Which brings me to my...
We had a percher on that was about 18.2, and I think 14 by 14 was too small. So he actually did get cast in the stall one day, and that was an interesting thing because... The two of us couldn't do anything about it. Jennifer and I, he weighed a ton. So we had to go next door to the plumbing shop and get all these plumbers that knew nothing about horses to come over, and we tied ropes around, and we were afraid when we rolled him over that he was going to, you know, freak out and get up real fast and, you know, squish us in the stall. But he didn't. We rolled him over, and he laid there and went, okay, this is where I wanted to be anyway, and he stayed there for a while, and then he got up. So.
Oh, can I pop a comment in on that, on a draft horse in the stall?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had draft horses in temporary stalls, and they were rubbing their tails. And basically, they just improved the stall size for themselves because they burned off the center of the temporary stalls just from rubbing their tails. It bowed out and eventually popped the wall that held the walls between the two stalls.
Awesome.
Yeah, a one-ton beast will do that.
Yes. They're a little bit mischievous on stalls, I'll tell you that.
I don't imagine they're easy on them.
10 by 10 seems awful small for any horse. The pony that we rescued was in a 10 by 10 stall for over a year without ever being let out of it. And unfortunately, you know, he has no muscle, no tone at all. And he was very excited to be turned out in the pasture for the first time. So 10 by 10, even for our little pony, was very small. So our stalls right now are 12 by 24 because we're just lucky enough to have some big panels put together for our outdoor Arizona type barn. But I certainly would think 10 by 10 would be small, and 14 by 14, Glenn, for a 2,000-pound horse would be a little limiting as well.
I think you made a great point there, Jamie, that if a 10 by 10 stall is one thing when they're in for, okay, bring them in for an hour to eat, put them back out. That's easy peasy. But when they're in 24/7, boy, oh, boy, they need some leg room.
Yes, I agree to that. And you'll find in the barn building books, 10 by 10 seems to be the usual recommendation, but I think it's exactly for that reason. Come in, eat, and go back out.
I think, too, there's the issue of having enough space to work around the horse if you do very much with them in the stall. You know, you want to have a little bit of room for yourself as well.
Yeah.
Amen.
Right.
So, Glenn, regarding your story of getting cast, actually, Aaron, what would your suggestions be for tips on setting up your stall wall height or depth or anything to help keep horses from getting cast in the box?
There is no foolproof for keeping them from getting cast, I hate to tell you. as far as stall height or barriers, there would be based upon a stallion's being stalled next to another stallion. if you have warm bloods as opposed to Arabians, and you have a different height there, but you want to have breathe through or flow through, and you also want them to be able to see each other because they're gregarious animals, so they want to communicate to each other. The other thing is, too, is it a boarding barn or is it your own personal barn? Boarding barns, they don't want to spread disease. One down is, you know, from stall to stall to stall, so they'll want to put a solid wall between them because in case there's a horse that does come up with a snotty nose or something to affect, that would be easier to keep it confined.
Gotcha. And what about a safe height for the ceiling if you don't happen to have the ability to have just a wide open to the far distant roof capability?
That one's a tough one. They usually store their hay above the stalls when they have a ceiling like that. And I'll say right off the bat, don't store your hay in your barn. That's a fire hazard that has been the primary reason for most fires in barns. I would say if they're going to have to do that, it would at least be 12-foot high ceiling to it, at least. Again, if you're looking at draft horses or very large warm bloods, you'd have to consider going a bit higher or just use the rafters.
I'll just say a goofy story about ceilings. I used to work in spend, you know, most of my life when I was a kid growing up at a local stables, and we had about 60 horses in stables there. It was a trail and lesson barn and whatnot, and the stalls outdoors were very open, you know, just, you know, basic 2x4 frame and a corrugated tin roofs, and we had a little walking horse cross pony stallion that was one of the goofiest animals I think I have ever run across. And he actually really liked the low ceiling in some of those stalls, because when he'd get bored, he'd just pop rear and just repeatedly bang the top of his head into it.
Oh, nice. I must
you think
say
he was fun to
I
watch,
feel...
you should have tried to ride him.
Oh, no, no thanks. I feel like you're given the extreme minimums of requirements. I mean, saying 10 by 10 is a stall. I mean, yeah, if you can just bring him in and then turn him back out, and then a 12-foot roof. I mean, I would say make it more ideal as opposed to what you can get away with, simply because if you're going to be building something, it's going to be something that you're investing a lot of money into, and you're going to want to be comfortable, and you're going to want your animal to be comfortable. So I would say, you know, add to your minimums there and make it bigger and make it more comfortable and expansive, because you're going to have to live with it, and your horses are going to have to live in it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. My stalls in my clinic are 12 by 12. Now, I bought the barn that way, but they're 12 by 12, and we have a rafter ceiling, so there is no ceiling to it. And that, I think, is the best preference, because ventilation for cooling in the summertime and for wintertime moving the air out is so much better to have rafters, because you want to have that air sucked up and pulled out under the eaves, or if you have a, what do they call it, the one that runs down the center that goes up into the cupolas. Those are the best ventilation-type barns. As far as the size, 12 by 12, I think that's small. Personally, I would like to see a 14 by 14.
All right.
Yeah.
Perfect.
It's sort of like humans now. Everybody's looking for that big master bedroom, and there's a reason for that. we could live in 10 by 10, but we don't. So, all right, well, let's talk about stall bedding, because now there's so many different types of stall bedding out there. You know, it used to be we used straw. By the way, horse husbands hate straw bedding. I absolutely despise straw bedding. I hated cleaning straw bedding. I hated everything about straw bedding as a horse husband. But, you know, now there's so many different types. Talk about that.
The straw bedding, I agree with you. I'm on board with the horse husbands. I hate straw bedding. The best thing about straw bedding, though, is for the babies. I recommend it for any foaling mare, because as the babies come out, take their first few breaths, they can suck up the shavings immediately and stick them around their nose, because their nose is all wet. So the straw bedding is basically almost not mandatory, but very highly recommended for foaling out mares and for the first week of life. After that, go back to your shavings. The shavings... big thing, make sure there's no black walnut in your shavings. That causes laminitis. We don't know what the mechanism of action is, but them standing on black walnut shavings causes laminitis or founder. So you have to make sure that whatever mill you're getting it from, if you're getting it in bulk, does not have black walnut in it. Anything else beyond that goes to the dusty particles. How dusty is it in your barn? The smaller the particles are, the more dust you get. The larger the particles, the less absorption you get. So you kind of have a trade-off. So you kind of find something in between.
Now, Erin, you mentioned a black walnut.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I got part of each question.
I said you mentioned black walnut. How would you know if you had black walnut in your shavings?
It is very hard to determine in the shaving group. So you'd have to ask them their source of their shavings. The place I like to get mine from is a door-making facility here. They make wooden doors. And they have no black walnut wooden doors. So that was real easy for me to find out. So, and that's where I get it bulk. Anything you get packaged at a feed store made for horses should not have black walnut in it anyway, because that's a standard.
Gotcha. Now, Glenn, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I was asking. Yeah, no problem. I was asking. It's your segment. I'm interrupting you. I was asking about the pelleted bedding. You know, is that, do you like it, or?
I'm not a big fan of it, but I've got a lot of clients that are. They seem to think that it does a great job absorbing. I kind of like the idea of, if a horse is going to be in the stall for quite some time, it needs a little bit of softness to lay down on. Are you going to start getting those stall sores at their hocks and their elbows, just like a bed sore on a person who lays down and stays down too much? Getting up and down off of dirt and up and down off of rubber mats tends to rub those areas pretty raw. So I'm a big fan of having a little bit more bedding, because they do lay down in their stalls. But if you're using it, again, just for running in to eat and running back out, the pelleted might work good for you.
Yeah. And I think, too, it depends on what stage the pellets are in. You know, once they're grown up, once they've poofed, it's a little bit better. But those first couple of days when they haven't poofed yet, you do have it must be sort of like laying on, laying on little pellets.
Yes. Well, I've opened up the door here, too. Dirt floors, clay floors, rubber mats. As a personal preference on that, I like the rubber mats. They're easier to clean. in our veterinary world, if we're going to have rubber mats, we need to seal the creases of the rubber mats so that we can sterilize the floors between cases, especially at the clinics. Concrete floors work better because we can sterilize a lot better. But then again, they're a bit tougher on the horse to stand all day and then lay down. You're definitely going to have to add more shavings on a concrete floor. The dirt and the clay, they're a little kinder to the horse's feet, but they're not very great for a veterinary clinic. They might be perfect for home. The only thing is soaping up the urine that they have urinated onto the clay or the dirt and keeping the ammonia smell down.
Very good. And I'd like to make one more point about pellets. We've got a blog on our website called Smart Horse Keeping, and Elaine Blickle of Horses for Clean Water is one of our authors on that. She actually did a post just within the last couple of weeks on bedding choices, and they actually use pellets quite a bit out at their farm in Idaho, but they tend to, whenever it's not super cold outside, they like to wet the pellets just a little bit first to get them to, as Glenn so eloquently put it, poof.
Yes.
Yeah, you're supposed to do that with the pellets. You really are supposed to wet them down when you first get them in there to get them activated, to get them started. So.
Very good.
Cool.
Very good. Well, the next topic I had on the list was something that we talked about a little bit earlier as far as hay storage, but hay storage, feed storage, security of anything that might be harmful to your horse. I think we talked about this a little bit last week, too, with the double barrier system, but I just wanted to bring it up again today.
Yeah, I agree. The double barrier system is absolutely imperative, and that means one barrier to get into the room where the feed and hay is being stored, and a second barrier for primarily the grain that the horse can't get into. And it's, again, they're very simple. You can get a rubber barrel that has a screw top to them. Those are at Tractor Supply. You can get you can have somebody just make you a four-sided bin with a lid, and you put a little clip on that, just your regular horse clips, and the horse can't get into it. Very, very simple thing. Some people have done bungee cords over top of an aluminum trash can lid. That's fair enough as long as they keep the bungee cord over the top of the trash can lid. There's always human nature of, oh, I don't have time today or I forgot or things like that. Then as far as where to store it, it's easy to have it in the barn, especially in this cold winter. You want to go in the barn, you want to stay where it's warm, feed the horses, and get out. And they say that the hay is a primary source of combustion in wood barns and the primary source for fire. So having your hay stored somewhere else and maybe bringing one or two bales into the barn that are separated with some good ventilation on their side, not flat like we normally pick them up with the strings on the top. They need to be on their side so the ventilation goes through the flakes of the hay and allows for good ventilation of the hay and not increasing combustion by stacking them next to each other. You can bring a couple in at a time to hay for that morning or that day or for a couple days, depending on the size of your barn. But I would not recommend storing your hay in your barn because of the possibility of fire. Some of your insurance policies will probably have a rider on that, and you probably need to look into that.
And I have a quick question on the security of feedstuffs. Here in Lexington, Kentucky, it is a very, very common practice. I would say 80% of the barns, when they set up feed in the evening feed, they set up the morning feed by pouring it into a little canvas sack, and then they hang the canvas sack on the front of each stall door. And I had not come across that. Apparently it's very common in large commercial breeding operations, both here in Lexington and other places. Have you, as a veterinarian, ever come across issues where, okay, somebody gets loose and goes and eats enough grain to feed 35 brood mares in one night?
Not out of the canvas sack, no. Getting in the feed room and doing the tub, yes, but not out of a canvas sack. The other thing is wheelbarrows. They're common. They pour in boarding barns especially, they pour the entire bag of grain in a wheelbarrow, and they wheel it up and down the barn and toss it into the feed tubs. Those collect here in the summertime a lot of flies on top of that grain, especially
right,
if there's a little molasses in it, and I find that to be a non-hygienic way of storing your grain and divvying it out.
Right. And if I could add slightly more detail to Christy's comment on stacking your hay, if you get green hay that's been freshly harvested from the field and not already aged in a mow, you not only should be putting it on the side so the strings aren't down, you need to put it on the cut side, which means, because each bale has a fold side and a cut side,
yes,
and you want to put it on the cut side down because that really does maximize the appropriate amount of air circulation between the bales, because the bales, when they come from the field to the storage area,
for the first 14 to 30 days, that's when the high risk of combustion is, because that's when the bale heats and cures for real. So when you get your hay in, folks, if you don't know the difference between a cut side and a folded side on your bale, ask your hay dude. He'll tell you.
Absolutely. Good point.
That's pretty evident, too. We have some friends down the street from us. They, ironically, their farm is called Little Kentucky. And they actually, because they stored their hay away from their barn, they have a huge hay shed. I mean, they have 50 horses there. And they had their hay shed on the opposite side of the barn, which I'm sure is a pain for the guys that work there to, you know, lug the hay back and forth. But they were out of town and had a combustion fire. And lost every bale of hay, but you know what? Because it was far enough away, they didn't have one single horse injury on the whole thing. And that's why it's so important to not store your hay in your barn. And it seems such an easy thing to do, to stick it up in the loft. Store your old blankets up in the loft. Do not store your hay in there because of things like that. You lose all your hay and all your horses right at the same time, and it's just a tragic thing that happens. So that's very important. Thanks for stressing that.
Yes, I agree. And one other just quick question about storing hay. Is it preferred to store it on pallets to get more air underneath as well?
Off the ground is perfect, yes. Even if you put it on a tarp, you don't have the condensation from the ground.
Okay, very good. And we actually have an article that our news editor is working on right now with fire prevention tips. So check that out on thehorse.com the next day or two. Last thing I have, I think we're probably running a little short on time, but as long as we're talking about feeding horses and hay and whatnot and buckets, let's talk a little bit about buckets and hooks for buckets and hay nets versus bags. What's the safest way to hang a bucket for a horse? I think a lot of people don't like the J hook.
Can I add in water?
Yes, water.
No animal, including humans, can live without water. That is the most important thing that the horses should have. So, of course, wintertime you need to keep the buckets unfrozen as best as you can. And in your barn, I am not a fan of automatic waterers unless you have a meter on that water, because you don't know in the wintertime how much they decrease drinking out of it. I had automatic waterers in this barn that I purchased for my clinic, and I shut them all off. And I make my employees and myself lug buckets in and out, clean them up in between.
This horse husband now just had a heart attack. I'm dying over here.
Sorry. Not a fan of them because you can't tell how much they drink, especially if you get a colic. You want to know how much did they drink, and if they were decreasing on their drinking, then you need to look at your feed schedule that day, increase or decrease your grain, watch them a little more closely, that kind of thing. We did that all the time here at the clinic when horses come and go, is did they finish their grain? Great. How much water do they drink the night before or during the day while they're in the stalls? Very, very important to their digestive system. They need that water to help move everything through the ingesta through their intestinal tract. Have a little funny story on that. Went to do a intranasal vaccine on a horse with a very nice automatic water in the stall. Horse backed up, sat on the automatic water, busted it, and we all got showered. So that's another reason I'm not too big on the automatic waters, too, is they cause the leaks and can flood your stalls, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, the barn where I grew up had automatic waters as well, and one of the things that I found is that, aside from not knowing how much the horse drank, is that it was very, very easy just to completely ignore them because they were just sitting off in the corner of the stall and keeping the horse water and doing their own thing. I found it was very easy to not clean them often enough.
Absolutely.
You find that as well?
Yes. Yes, I'll find mold rings around them easier than I will buckets.
Right.
Yeah, Christy, I'll tell you what, though, I've been in a lot of barns where they don't clean their buckets either, so I think that goes back
well,
to the person
cool.
more than...
Yeah,
I know where Christy wants to go with the buckets, and I'd like to address that. The edges of the buckets, especially the ones you buy from the feed store, have little rubber tips on them. They come that way. Those rubber tips tend to fall off. And at the beginning, those rubber tips are good because they protect the face of a horse. When they fall off, the horse tends to rub their face on something in the stall. They'll pick that, and you get a torn eyelid. 9 times out of 10, when I get torn eyelids, it's from a bucket. So I tell those people that lose the tips on the buckets, and we've had it as a owner recommendation out of my practice consistently, is get some electrical tape, get duct tape, and tape it up if you can't buy the tips to put on those bucket handles. When you're hanging the buckets, they're usually a double hook. Face the latch part towards the wall. Don't have it facing out. That's just another raised surface for the horse to rub their face on and hook it on something and cause damage to their face.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, right, guys, we are plane running out of time. This has been, you know, it's always fun. We do shows sometimes with barn builders on building barns, and they talk about air ventilation and everything. And I'm always amazed at how popular those shows are. So I'm glad you talked about this today because, you know, if you're a backyard horse owner and you don't have much exposure, you don't chat with a whole lot of people, you don't know whether you're doing it right or not. So it's times like this when you go, oh, hey, we always stored our hay in the barn. You know, and I know that we were risking it too, but we lived in Pennsylvania. We had a bank barn. That's what you did. You know, it's kind of what you did. I think that was all good advice.
I think that's a very good point. What you grow up with is just all you know to do until you find out a little bit more. So I definitely found that.
Well, that's why we're glad we have thehorse.com coming on here to do this. So thank you both, and we'll talk to you again next week. You guys have a great week.
We will.
Too.
Thank you so much. Again, to remind everybody that we have an hour-long session on this very topic tomorrow evening, 8 o'clock Eastern, on thehorse.com. So hope you guys can join us.
And, of course, lots of other terrific articles and all kinds of good information over at thehorse.com.
All kinds of stuff. Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you, guys. All right, Jamie, we are back here, and we are going to talk a little bit about our sponsor this half hour, and that's Back on Track. Back on Track is not just for the pros. Any level of rider can benefit from their unique line of therapeutic products for horses, humans, and dogs. Back on Track has some new products available, exercise boots, bell boots, and Western saddle pads, too. Visit backontrackproducts.com today or give them a call at 888-758-9836. That's Back on Track Products at backontrackproducts.com. So, Katie, we're back. So you're running out there now to take the hay. You don't really keep hay in the barn because you really have barn. You have more like lean-to kind of things, right?
No. Well, what we have in my backyard, because air ventilation is utmost importance, and we also hang misters and mist the horses in their stalls in the summertime. So basically it's like paneling, but you know, the paneling has to meet edge to edge. There's no rounded edges for a leg to get hung. It's at least a foot apart, the bars are. And so I went and researched and got the safest panels I could find, and they're really thick steel. You couldn't move them yourself at all. So we had a guy come out and install those, and they're underneath just a shed roof that's tilted a little bit to provide shade. And then what we do out here, because they do drink so much water in the summertime, is, and I just hate automatic waterers. I know you hate to hear that. What we do is we have to scrub and clean muck tubs full of water. I'm not comfortable leaving the horses with just two or three buckets. I leave muck tubs full. And so every stall, every day, I go out there as soon as the show is over. I bring the horses in. I feed them. And then I start cleaning muck tubs. And we do it every single day. You mentioned something about horses being in barns where they didn't clean the buckets every day. And that to me is just one of the most important things about being a horse owner. You cannot be lazy, Glenn. You have to scrub your buckets every single day.
Hey, Jennifer always made me do it. Are you kidding? We she'd be out there going, okay, clean the buckets. And I go, oh.
Well,
you know,
Glenn, to be truthful,
yes?
I think Glenn was more obsessed with the cleanliness of the buckets than I was, to tell you the truth. He's yanking your chain. He was bonkers about the fact that you don't just fill them up. You just have to dump them out and scrub them and then refill them. And we had, we were a little outfit, so we had a conglomeration of different kinds of buckets, red ones and green ones and different brands. And the light-colored ones, you know, after 8, 10, 12 years, they would start to get stained. And he would just obsess over the fact that there were algae stains inside of there. And I'm going, Glenn.
Yes, yeah, I hated that.
That bucket is as old as I am.
I wanted to buy brand new buckets.
I find out here that the dark green ones work very well. So those are the ones that we have out here, big dark green muck tubs, and they get filled up a couple times a day. Not so much in this kind of weather, but in the summer, I mean, it's utmost important because they'll drink an entire muck tub full of water in the first couple hours of the day. It's
wow.
That's
amazing.
Yeah, it's really hot.
Wow. That's kind of a necessity, though,
I can absolutely see your point about the waters. I understand that, you know, I was just goofing around a little bit there. but I do understand that. I mean, you know, Of course, us horse hunters, we just want to get the barn done as fast as possible so we can go back inside. That's kind of the plan.
That's right. Yeah. I love the idea of putting a water meter on there. I think that's the smartest thing going.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Jennifer, did you have a story about falls?
I have an awesome horror story.
Oh, no.
At a barn I used to work for years ago, they had the beautiful custom-made barn on the interior. That's the beautifully stained wood and the color-coordinated latches and the pretty arches and stuff. But the bars on the stalls, first and foremost, were only the solid wall only went 4 feet high. And most of the horses that lived in this barn were the ginormous, 17 hands and up. Big, big horses lived in this barn. And then second, when they manufactured the bar sections, the bars were just made out of like a rebar, a solid bar that it was smooth, unlike rebar that's bumpy, but it was a smooth bar. And horses being horses, they kick at each other, especially when they have bars between the stalls, which they did. It was not a solid wall from stall to stall. Kicking and fussing at each other all the time. And we had one mare that was a good kicker. She'd let fly with both hind feet pretty regularly at feed time and other times. Well, she let fly with both hind legs one day, and her hooves kicked the bars, not the wall. So one hind foot went right through the bars, right up to her hock.
I don't want to hear the rest of the story. I don't want to hear.
The other one didn't. And her foot went through about a foot and a half above the bar, so they sprang. They were not tubes. They were solid, so they had spring to them. Well, then it clamped right back down around her hock, and there she hung. Yeah. this was a very well-loved and very expensive animal that belonged to a client. So we gathered the troops, and the mare just kind of hung there and went, duh, what's wrong now? And we got the bolt cutters and went at it and got her out of there, and she was pretty thoroughly skinned up, but not broken in any way. And lesson learned there, A, make sure your stall bars are tubular and not solid because that will remove the spring. And B, make sure they're a maximum of 3 inches apart. If they're more than 3 inches apart, a horse with a small hoof can get it through.
Well, you always learn the lessons the hard way. That's definitely some good advice. But I got to ask you, Jen, while we're on the topic, because we are still taking calls on people's favorite horses, of course, at 347-637-3238. I'm going to talk about my favorite horse that kind of had a bizarre ending.
<Uh-oh>.
Kind of strange. But who is your favorite TV movie horse?
My favorite TV horse is technically an equid. Francis the Talking Mule movies. There was a whole series of them. They came out in the 50s. And I'm thinking they were they Disney? Maybe not. Donald O'Connor was in them And Francis joins the army. And it's just, there's a whole bunch of them. And I love them to death. That's my absolute favorite is Francis the Talking Mule.
Oh, that's great. That's cool.
What was yours? You've been teasing this whole show, so what was your favorite horse?
Well, every Saturday morning, my dad and I would watch television, and we watched things like, I never was really a Saturday morning cartoon watcher because we only had one TV, and that TV belonged to my father on Saturday mornings, but I didn't mind because we would watch Bonanza together. And then episodes of Roy Rogers' TV show. And that is just what the lineup was on Saturday morning in Atlanta. I don't know why. So we would watch Bonanza together. And, of course, Hoss and the gang.
Which one of the characters rode the paint? One of them had a paint horse, right?
Well, Michael Landon had...
Is that Michael Landon's horse? Okay.
I think that was Michael Landon's horse. So,
yeah.
But we also watched Roy Rogers. And if you have the opportunity to now go back and watch any Roy Rogers episodes or movies, you will see it's unbelievably impressive what Trigger could do. That horse could do anything. And you realize, too, now he was a gated horse. I believe he was a Tennessee walking horse. But he was so unbelievably talented. He did dressage movements like Spanish walk. He did, the rearing and the laying down and the bowing. It was just such a cool relationship. that Roy Rogers had with Trigger. And, of course, there's, like, Trigger Jr., and yeah, there's spin-offs of it. But I just read an article not too long ago, and I wanted to share it with you guys because, obviously, there was a Roy Rogers Museum in Branson, Missouri, which is kind of where all the people that are too old for, what do you call it, the Grand Ole Opry, Glenn? Those people, when they retire from the Grand Ole Opry, they then go to Branson and perform. So I don't know if you've, have you ever been there? Well, I don't know if they're even there anymore. Let's see. So
hopefully,
yeah,
it's still there. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I met you guys. So the Branson, Missouri had a Roy Rogers Museum where they had, Roy Rogers had Trigger stuffed after he died. And they stuffed Trigger and mounted him in this, like, rearing pose, and they stuffed Trigger Jr., they stuffed his German Shepherd. So there were all these stuffed dead animals at the
Yeah,
Roy
pretty
Rogers
much the whole family.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the quotes I read, is that if Roy could have had himself stuffed and put on Trigger, he'd have been happier when he passed. But what happened recently is the Roy Rogers Museum was losing money hand over fist in Branson, Missouri. Not many visitors anymore. And apparently Roy had told his family, his kids and grandkids, that if it ever loses money, to sell everything. So they did. They had an auction, and they auctioned off Trigger, big stuffed dead Trigger, and the Trigger Jr., and the German Shepherd, and every single piece of memorabilia that was in the entire show, including the horse.
What'd you buy at the
and
auction today, honey?
I bought a big gun. Hey, now, Trigger, I got to say here, Jamie, Trigger ain't looking so good in those pictures anymore. He's kind of looking old.
Oh, it
he's
looks
looking
disgusting.
Like an old stuffed horse now.
It's
kind of disgusting.
It's so disturbing to see him frozen in some rearing pose. And, I mean, granted, that happened a very long time ago. But you know what? Somebody paid a lot of money for that old, dead, stuffed, gross, disturbing image of Trigger. And it was a Nebraska cable TV network. I'm sure we've all heard of it. RSDTV. They paid $266,500 for Trigger at an auction. It was not Lloyd's of London. It was one of the Christie's auction, and they had it in New York City this summer. And apparently, Trigger was estimated to go for $100,000, and he went all the way up to $266,500 for the disturbing image of Trigger.
Okay.
I didn't realize he went that high.
Yeah.
That brings to mind the horse hunting when you said that, because a lot of us have had that experience where you go out and buy a horse for what you consider a lot of money, and it turns out to be not at all the horse you wanted. So they paid $260,000, not for a horse that was sick, not for a horse that was lame, not for a horse that was spooky when he was sold, not spooky, but for a dead one. Yeah.
And for this, I just think taxidermy is kind of bizarre anyway, but to stuff your horse... I mean, and he did it in 1965, so this is like no new Trigger, I guess. I'm trying to find the words to describe it because it's so weird. First of all, that he stuffed him. Second of all, that then they sold him. And then third of all, somebody else bought him for $266,000. I don't know where to go with this story. I just had to tell you that my favorite horse is now owned by some television network in Nebraska.
But Jamie...
Well,
on the other hand, okay, they bought...
I think they were
going
to put him in the lobby there, too.
Yeah, they
I think that's what they were going to do with him.
Yeah, they bought Trigger, okay? He's a stuffed dummy, and they bought him. But can you imagine being the museum curator? Trigger. Stuffed, but Trigger. You couldn't put him in the dumpster? That would be wrong.
I know, the whole thing is just weird. Yeah, the whole thing is just weird. Well, I hope the Rogers family is happy with how things worked out, and they're pleased with the price they got on him, and good luck to him in the future.
Yeah, and he'll be, actually, at least I was happy that all the memorabilia stayed with at least, you know, horse people, and it's going to be on display down there at RFD. So we're glad somebody horsey, you know, that's going to appreciate all that memorabilia got it. Well, be sure to listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. We have 8 of them now, and you can find them all over there. You can listen to them anytime you want. That's the nice thing about a podcast. You can also follow us on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. That's where you can see if you won today's prize. And also, we are on Twitter at Horse Radio.
And if you missed a live show, you can always listen to this recorded version on our website, horsesinthemorning.com. You can go back and listen to yesterday's if you missed. You can listen to the first one if you want. You can find it on our affiliate websites, iTunes. You don't have to miss any episodes. And we'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 Eastern with another YouTube sensation, and you are going to want to watch this one. His name is Naughty Ed. So just YouTube Naughty Ed, and you will see the most evil pony probably in the world. We're also going to take a look at horse history with Fran Yerger's Horse Almanac and more calls from the best listeners, you guys, in the entire horse world. So say goodbye, Glenn.
Goodbye, Glenn. Goodbye, Jamie. Goodbye, Jennifer. Goodbye, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day. Ride safe. Wear your helmet.